Hello, welcome back, everyone, to the Smoke and Snake podcast. This is episode 74 of the only English language podcast all about Brazilian football. You've got, of course, your hosts, Peter, which is myself, and Enric. And we've got another exciting week. Enric, we say it every week, but this is really getting down to the nitty-gritty. We've had a shakeup. We've had a different leader and the Brasileirão table. We've got relegation drama. We've got sad scenes of pitch invasions for fans brawling on the pitch. But it just goes to show you how much everything means to the players, the fans. But yeah, just another week of madness in Brazil. Two match weeks to go over, plus Serie B, plus, like we said last time, Seleção, what they're all convening now. So yeah, we've just got a ton to go over, and I cannot wait because it's getting to that point in the season where every little thing counts, and it's so fun and so dramatic, and there's so much juice there. So really excited to dive into this one. But before we do that, Enric, what's going on, man? How are you? I know it's been a crazy week for you as well.
I'm very well, Peter. And yeah, it's been a nice week. We had some crazy matches, as we always do. And as you said, we're getting to that point of the season where all the important and probably the best matches and decide the outcomes of these tournaments are almost coming here. And within 4 or 5 match weeks, the Brasileirão will be over. Soon the Serie B will also be over. But we will be here anyways, producing some content for you guys and doing everything we can by talking about Brazilian football.
Yeah, and we've got hopefully get some interviews lined up, some great guys. We've got tons of stuff planned, and I think it'll be nice to have a break. But before we do that, we got 4 more match days, a couple of makeup matches to get to. So it should be really dramatic. And again, the best league in the world in terms of drama. And in terms of unpredictability. So, Enric, let's start off with match week 33. This one had some enormous matches, but let's start with a few that we might just gloss over here. Internacional drawing Fluminense, 0-0. You know, two teams that met in the later stages of Libertadores, but nothing too exciting in this match. America hosting Coritiba. They get their asses beaten 3-0, and that means that they're mathematically relegated. They're out. I think they're the first team that's going. Coritiba probably right behind them. You know, commiserations to them. They'll do well, hopefully, in Serie B, and also they've got some nice little players that that might be on the transfer list. Mastroianni comes to mind, top scorer of Sudamericana. And then this one's very impactful. Sao Paulo 1, Red Bull Bragantino 0. Big time blow for Red Bull Braga's title hopes, but they're still alive. We'll get to all the other results. But what do you think about those first three matches, Enric? How are you looking at them?
Yeah, I mean, the first result, Inter drawing 0-0 with Fluminense. I don't think that was the best result for Inter, despite drawing with America Mineiro last week. I feel like they had revenge that they needed to take care of against Fluminense while playing at home. So they should have definitely used this chance and beat Fluminense after what happened in the Libertadores. But America Mineiro, as you said, mathematically relegated. Hopefully, Mastroianni will join a big side next year. And Coritiba still surviving at the moment. But I think in a week or week and a half, they're going to find themselves relegated as well. I criticized Robson last week for having 11 goals, I think, and 7 of them being penalty kicks. Now he started scoring real goals, so he helped Coritiba get the third one here. And then Sao Paulo against Red Bull, another match that a big one. Game was played in Vila Belmiro, and yeah, it's something that as Santos fans we didn't really like to see, but Harrison scores a penalty kick in the 90th minute to kill Red Bull Bragantino's hopes. Harrison, a name that we have mentioned since the beginning of our podcast last year. And now for the first time, I think he scores. And yeah, it's great for him. Great result for Sao Paulo, even though they don't really need it. It only brings disadvantages to Red Bull Bragantino. But other than that, we also had Atletico Paranaense tying 1-1 to Fortaleza at home. And I think, again, here a result that doesn't hurt either team.
Yeah. That was weird in Villa Belmiro, Sao Paulo playing. But you're right. That last-minute goal, Arison, like you said, a player that we really liked last season. We couldn't believe Botafogo got rid of him. Of course, we were in the wrong then. He's kind of been on the decline since us talking him up. So maybe we'll just leave him alone. And Atletico Paranaense, Fortaleza, two middle-of-the-road teams. They're not going to do anything interesting, I don't think, before the end of the season. And just two teams that don't really excite me. Fortaleza, maybe more, but without Vitor Roque, I mean, I really think the wheels have come off. And I said it last week with Atletico Paranaense. But, all right, Enric, let's dive into this one. Flamengo versus Palmeiras, two of the most successful teams in Brazil over the last decade or so, loaded with talent, loaded with young players, and loaded with personalities too. Two very different coaches behind the bench, but equally successful, Chichi and Alba Ferreira. Flamengo find themselves on the better end of it, hosting in Maracanã, 3-0 victory. Pretty straightforward. It goes to, you know, sort of, you know, it looks like at the end of the day, Pedro on the score sheet, and of course, Jorginho de Hascaeta as well.
Yeah, 3-0 result. I think this only does Flamengo advantages. I think they're really happy to get this win here. I believe the last match between these two teams ended 1-1, in which Arrascaeta scored. So once again, he does it again here. Pedro, another name that has been popping up ever since Tite came over as a manager. And I really like to see that a player that almost went out of the club and was aiming for a move outside of Flamengo in the January transfer or even in the summer transfer window. I'm really happy that now he's back in scoring ways. You could argue that a red card by Gustavo Gomez in the 48th minute definitely helped Flamengo, but if they had already scored and done so with Pedro in the 18th minute. So again, Arrascaeta gets a goal, Pedro gets two goals, a clean sheet, and amazing. It couldn't be any more perfect for Flamengo side as they get their hopes up, and who knows, maybe they could win this title.
Yeah, they've seemed to find a little bit of stability finally after all the drama. And they're not too far off. I mean, I don't think we've really been talking about them as contenders. But they'll definitely be fighting for the Libertadores spot. And you're right. I mean, we'll get to some of the results later, but they've been a mixed bag for most of those top teams. And Flamengo could slide in and maybe take a shot at winning this thing, which would be awesome. But you got to give credit. I think we've talked about how Palmeiras, how good they are, even going down a man, Flamengo, that is, when they played Santos. Same thing with Palmeiras. You look at some of the second half stats after Gustavo Gomez was sent off, still very much in it, still very much seeing a lot of the ball. Some of that could be, you know, that Flamengo already had a cushion, but it just goes to show you how impressive Abel's got his team going. And the technical quality of some of these players and the structure and the fitness too. Something that I always forget to mention, especially when it comes to these two teams, you see a lot of late goals, and that's just because they're just fitter than you. They're stronger, faster, and they're going to do what it takes to win. So great win here from Flamengo. And it's really ironic. I tweeted about it. This was before the Botafogo match, and it seemed that after such a dramatic loss to Palmeiras in the last round, so ironic that now Botafogo's arch rival, one of their arch nemesis, what's the plural of that word? could have done them a huge favor here in beating Palmeiras. And we'll get to that later. But wow, this was just a big result and one that I really didn't see coming. I thought Palmeiras might have had the better of them. But in the end, it is Flamengo that they grab all 3 points. All right. So moving on from a Rio team to a Sao Paulo team, Corinthians hosting Atlético Mineiro in this one. 1-1, the final score, probably a fair result. Two teams, I think, on either end, one hovering just below the Libertadores spots, one hovering just above really the relegation battle and trying hard not to get sucked into it. We said it before, but they're trying everything and they just can't get enough distance. I still think that they might be a little bit nervous, but with every passing match day, they'll be a little bit happier and they'll definitely appreciate the point they got here, even if it is just a point at home.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the first matchup between these two teams, Corinthians, I believe, won 2-0 away. And it was one of the last matches that Roger Goetz had played for Corinthians. And surprisingly, now they play at home, they can get a win. And yeah, it's, I think, very good that Atlético Mineiro equalized, because looking at the relegation battle, Corinthians can get stuck in the last four teams in the table. And who knows, maybe as Santistas, this is something that we would like to see. But yeah, I think it's a great result that Atlético Mineiro at least got a point out of this match with Paulinho equalizing in the 67th.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought him up because he is on a tear. That goal was his 17th of the season, and he now takes the top spot in the tournament. 4 goals. He overcomes Chiquinho Suarez of Botafogo, of course, who has been a little bit inconsistent as of late. Definitely not as hot as he's been, but Paulinho, man, continues to perform. Got a few more fast stats for you later when we get to Atlético Mineiro's next match with Hulk. That duo is historically good for the league and, of course, for Gallo. And Angel Romero as well, Corinthians, maybe you could have called him an idol, comes back to the team and contributing as well, even at more of a advanced age, shall we say. All right. Goiás hosting Santos, 0-0 until very, very late. Enric, there's been a lot of talk. You've seen the hashtags, a lot of talk back in the day with Alex Ferguson and Manchester United about Fergie time. But now there's a new time, Ferky time. Julio Ferk again popping up with a goal, this time in the 87th minute. Santos's Argentine super sub does it again, his third time in the last 10 minutes, and really probably the last 5 minutes, earning us the win. Really impressive. And whatever you paid for him in terms of signing bonuses, transfer fees, salary, I think he's really earned his wages and whatever fees Santos paid for him. He's got us 9 points all on the back of his feet/head. Great result. Maybe not the best viewing for the game, but huge, huge result.
Well, I don't really care if we have to wait 80 plus minutes in order to get a goal like how we did in this match. And because I thought we fought really hard to win at home against Goiás 4-3 back in July. And now playing away, this was a direct rival for us. And looking at the relegation battle, if Goiás, for example, would have won this match, it would have been 100% very bad for Santos. And it seemed like our players were going to be happy with the draw 0-0 until Furch came in. He scored the goal in the 87th, as he did against Gremio, as he did against Bahia, and probably many more matches in the past. Yeah, it's a player that has helped us a lot. It goes back to what I said a couple of months ago, that how we needed a striker that could replace Marcos Leonardo, who I believe didn't play in this match due to yellow cards. So we definitely needed Furch. What a player he has been, and yeah, giving us three very important points in this relegation battle against Goiás.
Yeah, so crucial, and we've said it a million times, every point counts, just inching towards that 45, 46 mark that tends to be safe. We'll see if it is that way this year. It might be a little different just for all the teams involved, but that's kind of where you want to be safe. All right. Possibly the most exciting, most heartbreaking, most uplifting, most incredible match of this match week. And ironically, it has the same scoreline as last week. Botafogo 3, Grêmio 4. Another setback for the champions to be, or so they thought. Henrik, the lineup to start was missing Chiquinho. Unfortunately, he had some family issues. Diego Costa steps into the starting 11. So already their star player for the year is missing in action for this one. They started off, you'd think, shorthanded, but they started the game with a banging goal to give them the 1-0 lead very early.
Yeah, and Botafogo, it seemed like they didn't learn from their mistakes of last week when they played Palmeiras. They took the lead on very early, as you said, with Diego Costa in the 6th minute. And then Grêmio equalized. I think Lucas Perry could have at least dived to stop Everton Galdino's shot, which went on the right side of the post. And yeah, I think credit to him for scoring that. But of course, the keeper could have done way better. And then Botafogo did what they did again against Palmeiras, pretty much killing their opponent in that first half. I think it was an amazing first half for Botafogo. Despite conceding one, they were able to score two. One was Junior Santos and one with Marlon Freitas. And then in the second half, everything changed. El Pistolero's show, it was, and he returned back to his prime years when he used to play for Liverpool or even Barcelona, the way how he used to score back then while having Messi on the side, now gets a hat trick in the space of only 19 minutes and gives Grêmio three very important points. And if it wasn't for Palmeiras that they should have learned from Botafogo, they should have looked at Grêmio's performances as well, because they played Curitiba, I believe, last week, in which Curitiba drew three times and Grêmio was able to come on and score again and again and again until they won 4-3, I believe, or 3-2. So pretty much what happened last week happened again between those two teams. Grêmio, I think if they continue to play like that, they could even win the title, which is something that nobody even thought about, as they continue to be around that third, fourth, or fifth spot throughout many match weeks in the Brasileirão. And then on the other side, Botafogo's defense was shambolic. There were too many spaces open for a marksman like Luisito Soares to waste and not score. So he took all of those advantages, scored three crucial goals, and gave Grêmio the three important points away from home, which is even more insane to say.
Yeah, I think this loss is much worse than Palmeiras. You had the controversial red card. And to me, this one just this screams that they do not have the champion mentality. I thought they deserved the championship up until maybe the Palmeiras game, maybe this game, but this sequence that they've been on, they are not champions. Definitely do not have the champion mentality. And even if they do end up winning it, I don't think that you'll be able to say that they were by far or even were the best team in the division, because right now they're absolutely nowhere close to that. And over the course of the season, they've looked, this is more what I would have expected from Botafogo at the start of the season, things like this. But like you said, I just want to go back to Luis Suarez. Absolutely incredible. 36 years old. 29 appearances in the rest of their out, 14 goals, 10 assists. I think he's up there, if not the number one for goal contributions, that 24 number. Just incredible. Gotta also say, great managerial changes from Renato Gaúcho. Brings on Cristaldo, brings on Ferreira, who had that incredible play and assist on the Suarez second goal. And then also you had Villasante as well, assisting the third. And it's just Suarez is just out of this world at 36 years old. It's just a pleasure to watch. And it's just, we're so privileged to have him in the Brasileirão. And I want to put to you, is he the best striker of his generation?
I mean, he's been scoring a lot of goals throughout his career and continues to do so at a very old age. I think he's like 35, 36, right?
36. Yeah, 36. So,
yeah, he's pretty much there. And yeah, I think he is one of the best. It's hard to say because we've had so many, especially in our generation, with those players being like Lewandowski, mm-hmm. Benzema, and even more. But I would argue that he is, because he played with one of the craziest trio of all time, the MSN, Messi, yeah. Neymar, and Suarez. And looking at back then, maybe it was a short period of time that these players played together, but the goals that they scored is just insane. And if they had played with each other at least 3 or 4 more years, I think they would have been the craziest or most important players in football's history. So I think Suarez pretty much stands there. I remember when he left Barcelona, he sort of wanted to prove it, to prove Ronald Koeman, the new manager that came into Barca, that he deserved to still play in the team. And despite he was dropped and he was sold to Atletico Madrid, he went on there and played like an absolute monster for Atletico Madrid. Even in matches that he had to play against Barcelona, he showed himself that he wants to be a beast. And it was even fighting with his old teammates like Ter Stegen, Jordi Alba, and just explains the spirit that Suarez is. And in that same year, I believe two years ago exactly, he won La Liga for the first time in 10 years with the club. So it's crazy. I mean, it's difficult to not say that he wasn't one of the best, but looking at his career and the trophies he's won and where he's placed, you could pretty much argue that he is. So yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree completely. The differences of teams that he's been on, going back to Nacional, coming to Gremio. I mean, it's incredible. And the story's not even over. He's going to go to Inter Miami. He's going to play with one of his best friends, Leo Messi. And it's incredible. And for me, for my money, when you look at the longevity of his career, the best of the generation. I know Lewandowski, on the international stage and the Bundesliga, and you got Benz with Real Madrid and all the Champions Leagues. But for me, no, it's Suarez. Even Aguero, right? You could say maybe Aguero's the clutch player. He's consistent and arguably the best league that has more parity than La Liga. But no, for me, Luis Suarez, and that's exactly why. So Suarez hat trick, Gremio wins, and that's it. That was it for Botafogo. They knew they had to make a change. Oh, excuse me, I'm getting ahead of myself, aren't I?
For what?
I was going to say Lucio Flavio, but he doesn't get canned till after.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. All right. And last match here, Bahia hosting Cuiabá, losing to Cuiabá 3-0. Of course, your old buddy Daverson getting in on the scoring. But Bahia, big result again, very much in the relegation battle. And this result certainly doesn't help them.
I mean, yeah, Bahia losing 3-0 definitely helped Santos. three goals scored by Cuiabá. First one with Daverson back in the score sheet, I believe, after 3 or 4 weeks. And then Pita, the guy who scored against Botafogo, does it again in the 77th. So three very important points, and happy to see Bahia sink down. Not so happy with their manager. I would have wished him the best luck, but since he plays or manages a team that's pretty much fighting with relegation with Santos, then yeah, I would like to see Bahia go down as well.
All right. Let's move it on over to the 34th match week in the rest of the row. Tons more action here. And Henrik, let's start off here right off the bat. Again, another relegation battle. Extremely important. Cruzeiro has dropped from mid-table to the relegation zone and are struggling to climb back out of it. Coritiba hosts them, and they win 1-0. And wouldn't you know it, who scores, Henrik?
Robson once again.
Exactly. 90th minute, not a pen, so he's escaping the criticism. I only can guess that he is a listener, and he heard that and he did not like it. But really here, the unfortunate part and the thing that's really notable about this game is after the last minute goal, and the scenes that we saw of the invasion of the pitch from the Cruzeiro fans and the counter invasion from the Coritiba, and then the resulting clash that we saw.
Yeah, and I was watching this match live. It was our previous co-host, the guest in the podcast, Eduardo Bispo, alongside Gabriel Fu. Two great commentators, by the way. And yeah, this was terrible scenes. I know it's funny to see at the moment like what was originally happening, but then once you saw all those fans fighting with each other, it was definitely something that you wouldn't want to see. And imagine if somebody had like a firearm or a knife next to them, it would have been horrible for those fans and for Brazilian football overall. But other than that, Coritiba gets a pretty important goal, not only for them, but also for Santos, because Cruzeiro still has two matches played less with only 3 points away. So if they manage to win both of those, they're going to make Santos go a place down in the table compared to where they currently are. So I was very happy with that goal, despite what happened afterwards. And yeah, Coritiba getting three very important points. And who knows, maybe they might even escape relegation if they continue to win like that, how they won last week and then this week.
Definitely a moonshot. It would be one of the greatest escapes of all time. I think they're all but relegated. It is unfortunate, but it's great to see them taking points. Also notable, after all the horrific scenes and the fights, and you're right, could have really escalated into something very nasty. And that's wouldn't be the first time we've seen that in world football, but also in Brazil. The coach sacked. He's gone. Zé Ricardo is gone. They got an interim coach in there now, but rumors are that they are recruiting Vanderlei Luxemburgo. Good signing, Henrik. I think you are a pretty big fan of his, no?
Vanderlei Luxemburgo, the guy who pretty much did nothing with Corinthians. I mean, who knows? I think it's a decision that shouldn't have been taken. I know that I believe in Brazil, they pretty much do these decisions and fire managers and bring on new ones just to sort of react to how the fans are protesting, which I don't really agree with. But yeah, I mean, 3 weeks outside of away from the end of the Brasileirão, Rao, maybe they're looking for a last minute escape to Serie B. And who knows, maybe they might survive, but I don't think a change of coach will do them any favor despite the situation they're currently in.
Yeah, and Vanderlei, the reason I kind of jestingly said, actually the last time Santos won the Serie A and the rest of their out was with Vanderlei at the helm. So very I guess nostalgic for those who were fans at the time, but you're right. Was not very beloved by Corinthians fans. And you only need to hop onto our boy Fabian's Twitter account to see that. But possibly one of the most passionate rivalries in Brazil, and also one of the best games in terms of quality of this match week, would have been Flamengo and Fluminense. Fla-Flu, as it's known, Chiche versus Fernando Diniz. Really huge game for the city of Rio, and also for both these teams. Fluminense are riding the wave of the Libertadores triumph. They had the parade the day after on the Sunday. The game was played on Saturday, and I'm sure that was a big distraction. They were probably planning, you know, what's the deal? Who's bringing the beers? You know, but no wins in the last three, and in bad form. So they really wanted this win. And Flamengo, like we already mentioned, they're trying to chase down that championship, and Chiche is expecting nothing less. So queued up to be a big game in the Maracanã. And Henrik, what do you think? Did it live up to expectations?
Not really. I mean, I would have liked to see either side win this match. And it's funny how. One second. Am I still in the same mic? Or I lost your voice. One second.
No. I was muted.
Oh, okay.
It sounded like you like switched for a second.
Yeah, it said it switched, but yeah, that's why I'm restarting. I mean, looking at these two great teams, the Fla-Flu playing against each other, I would have liked to see more goals and even a winner here. But 1-1, I don't think it's a bad result for either side. 1 week ago, it's funny how Fluminense was playing in the Libertadores final and chasing that first trophy. So great to see him here performing against a tough rival like Flamengo. And Deras Caeta opened the scoring. It came in the 45th minute again. He scored as he did in the midweek. And prior to that, I forgot to mention Everton Cebolinho. He hit the post very early in the first half. And he's one of those players that Tite is making them play compared to how Everton was in last season, where he would always come in as a sub and maybe perform for 20 to 30 minutes. And I always said, by the way, that I really like this player. I don't know why he doesn't get a starting position in the squad. So now he is playing with a very good manager. And Tito was a name that brought him in that 2019 Copa America. And he performed as crazy as he did back then.
Yeah, absolutely. I think was he not the player of the tournament, or he won? Yeah. Yeah. It's great to see those two back together. And he's one of my favorite players as well. Not really sure why it didn't work out at Benfica. I thought he did okay. Wasn't maybe the star talisman that Benfica were looking for. But yeah, he looked very, very lively. And the goal I just want to zero in on here, because really satisfying. Eric Pulgar, his pass to Jorginho de Hascaeta to set up the goal, was so simple and straightforward, but it's just a satisfying ball. They just made it look so easy. And I think Pulgar's kind of maybe had a few ups and downs in this Flamengo team, but assists a very nice goal to one of the best players in the Brasileirão this season, and for the extent of his stay here in Brazil.
Yeah, hopefully he continues to stay even more with Flamengo other than this year. So yeah, he's definitely a good player. Fabio on the other side, what a keeper he has been. He played very well against Boca Juniors and pretty much did the same here, if it wasn't for that goal that Deras Caeta scored. But in the second half, Fluminense came back with Gonzalez. They tied 1-1, and it was a weird goal. The ball was hit twice and then went in the back of the net. So again, 1-1, both teams get a goal, both teams get a point, and then both teams get a card, right, Peter?
Yeah, well, before that, it's really unfortunate. The goal scorer, Yanni Gonzalez, taken off, injured, and he started on the bench. So it's one of those rare occasions that a subbed-on player has to be subbed off, kind of in an unfortunate circumstances. But you're right. I mean, it was a little tense towards the end, and tensions boiled over. And of course, who is at the forefront of it? It's Gabriel Barbosa. Only 5 goals in the league this year. A little bit concerning, but Chiche obviously wants him to get back out there and start mixing it up, and replaces Pedro in the 70th or so minute. And basically, it looks like, you know, he's kind of decided, hey, if I'm not going to score, I'm going to try to contribute in another way and try to get under the other team's skin. And they went too far. They were grabbing at each other's throats, and lots of pushing and shoving, which you would expect, but got a little bit too physical between him and the Fluminense captain Nino. Just one of those things about the derby and tension, and it's got to be really frustrating for Gabriel Barbosa, you know, not contributing in the way that he's used to, in the way that the fans expect him to. You could see his frustration. And now he's going to get himself another game where he can't play with the red suspension.
I mean, he wasn't really playing even before that. And ever since Tite came back, I know as a manager and player relationship, they tend to forget of what happened in the past. For the quotes that Gabigol said during the World Cup about Tite, It seemed like now everything's fine, but still he is pretty much on the bench and there's players ahead of him that start, like Everton Cebolinha or De Arrascaeta, and most importantly, Pedro. So one thing that I like about this is that I see a lot of Santos fans still hoping for him to come back. And despite everything that he's done in the past, like shushing or celebrating when scoring against Santos, it seemed like the fans are not making that mistake that we used to do with Lucas Lima, in which nobody wanted him until he came on and apologized. So it's good that in a way, Gabigol has that door always open to come back to Santos, and who knows, maybe towards the end of his career, maybe not next year, but in 2 or 3 years, hopefully he can come back and play one more time for Santos, and maybe even Neymar and all the meninos that used to compete in the 2011, 2012, and 2013.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about his tense relationship with Chiche after the World Cup, and I think not just the World Cup, but just multiple, maybe he probably thinks some of them as snubs over the years with the Selecao. His relationship with Neymar as well, I'm not sure how that is these days. Gabigol was dating Rafaela, Neymar's sister. I don't know how that ended. It was on and off. Neymar, there was the famous photo of him winning the Olympics and they had blocked out Gabigol's face on the poster in Neymar's house. Yeah, that would be very interesting. And I would love to see Gabriel Barbosa come back. I think he's a great player when he wants to be. He's maybe has some attitude issues, some off the pitch issues, but he's really become a legend for Flamengo. And it's unfortunate to see him kind of fall off in this manner. And I really hope that he can maybe resurrect some of his goal scoring towards the end of the season. And if it all works out well, and maybe he doesn't have the room for Flamengo with Chiche, I think Santos would be a great fit for him and a great replacement for Marcus Leonardo. So, Gabriel, if you're listening, bro, come on back. All right. Flamengo and Fluminense splitting the points there. And that would allow a very momentous moment in the table to occur, which is Palmeiras regaining that top spot. Palmeiras do that with 3 points over Internacional. Zé Rafael, Endriki, and Enric's favorite player ever, Aroni, all on the score sheet. Huge moment for the league, and really just emblematic. You knew this was coming from Botafogo's form over the last few weeks. Botafogo have been top of the table seemingly since the start of the season. But Palmeiras back in that top spot. Botafogo still have a game in hand, so they can go top by 1 point if they win it. But man, it's I don't know what to say, Henrik. This is what we predicted at the start of the season, of course, but I don't like this at all.
Yeah, I don't like it either. The fact that Palmeiras sort of, I believe they were like fifth or sixth 10 weeks ago, and now they find themselves first. It's pretty weird. And on one side, I've said this before, I don't want to see Palmeiras win this, of course, as a Santos fan. But even Botafogo, they seemed like they were first for so long after match week 3, all the way up to match week 33. So for 30 plus weeks, they were up in that table for so long, and it seemed like impossible for any team to even compete. And we all remember what happened last year, where Palmeiras won the trophy and nobody wanted to take that second spot. So that was pretty much happening on here. They pretty much thought that Botafogo had won this competition, but now Palmeiras is back. 3-0 victory. I think it's pretty good scoring in the first half. Getting a goal with their youngster Enrique, and then of course Ronnie back in scoring ways after so long, getting a clean sheet, just like how they lost to Flamengo last week. They win here against an Inter side that has been really, really bad this season. So yeah, I believe if Palmeiras continue to play this way, they're pretty much going to get that back-to-back Brasileirão trophy. And even looking at their matches that they're going to be playing for the remainder of this season, it's not going to be really tough for them. They play Fortaleza away, they play America at home, they play Fluminense at home, and then their last match is away against a Cruzeiro side, which will be pretty much relegated. So if Fortaleza gets a win at the Castellão, maybe Botafogo or teams like Grêmio or Flamengo have a chance. But if Palmeiras get any sort of point out of that game, it's game over.
Yeah, that you could see that happening. You know, happened to be a tough game, of course, at the Castellão. Fortaleza haven't been very good lately. And ironically, that game in hand Botafogo have is against Fortaleza as well. Fluminense will be a challenge, but the other two games, especially at home, I think will be a walk in the park for Palmeiras, a walk in the Allianz Parque, if you will. So, not looking good for Botafogo. And speaking of Botafogo, let's talk about their next match. They went to the state of Sao Paulo. Bragantino, Red Bull Bragantino hosted them. And things did not start off very well. This was, of course, a big match. Red Bull Braga trying to get back to that sort of 1-2 spot would be an incredible achievement just for Libertadores spot, but they're gunning for the top. Just everything went wrong in the opening stages for Botafogo. Borbas starts scores in the first 3 minutes, and then Chiquinho Suarez, who's back from his family issues, injured in the first 20. Just horrific start.
Yeah, and as you said, that third minute goal, I believe, pretty much killed any Botafogo fans, their hopes. You could hear the shushers in the stadium because, of course, there were Botafogo fans in the stadium and they were really not happy about what happened in that match. And it seemed like Red Bull Bragantino had control of the game after their goal that they scored. A bit later, Diego Costa found himself in a 1v1 situation against Clayton. He hits a crossbar, but it was originally offside. So I think he hit the crossbar even a game like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Again, that was offside as well. But it just explains to you how Diego Costa is not meant to play in this sort of competition. He might score a goal or two, but other than that, he has no place in the starting lineup, especially when replacing Chiquinho Suarez. And then in that first half, there was a water break, I believe, in the 30th minute mark. And after that water break, Botafogo came completely different. Victor Sá striked the ball crazily, and the Red Bull Bragantino's keeper, Clayton, was stuck motionless. He didn't know what to do, and he just saw the ball going in the back of his net. And just 2 minutes later, it's Eduardo in the 37th. scoring a second goal for Botafogo. And Botafogo somehow find themselves from a disadvantage to an advantage of a goal. So what a crazy half we saw there, Peter.
Yeah, just again, the roller coaster Botafogo fans are on is incredible. These last three games. But you're right, Victor saw that shot was incredible. It kind of skipped on the ground right before it went in the net. The keeper absolutely frozen. Clayton didn't move a muscle. And then Victor saw 2 minutes later, whips a cross in. And the defender kind of blocks it, but it bounces right to Eduardo and easy finish. They're up. And again, we've seen this in their last couple of games. They get up and their mentality changes. I think they kind of get like a deer in the headlights, like, okay, we're back. And now what? We have to still see out this game. You said you thought Red Bull Bragantino kind of controlled more of the game. And you would be right, especially in the second half. 72% of the possession was at Red Bull Bragantino. All of the shots, all of the attacking moves, everything was going one way traffic. And that was pointed at the Botafogo net. XG was way higher, but Botafogo hanging on. Lucas Perry making some good saves, including a last-minute header that looked like it had maybe a bit of speed, but right at Lucas Perry, catches it. You'd think, oh, all right, they got 3 points here. Nope. One more last-minute chance. Again, a header. And again, the player that scored in the third minute, Borbas. Again, it's a draw at the end. Just really heartbreaking game. You got to feel for the Botafogo fans. At this point, they don't deserve the championship, but it's really sad to see the downfall of this team. It's such a historic achievement that they were going for. And it's really just unfortunate to see.
Yeah, definitely unfortunate looking at how this game went. And you said Diego Borba scoring that goal in the 90th plus minute. He scored 3 minutes before the game, after the game started, and 3 minutes before the game ended. So I don't know what was going on there, but a result that doesn't help either team. The only team that's happy with this result, it's Palmeiras. And yeah, Red Bull would have loved to win. Botafogo would have loved to win until the 90th minute, in which they just gave it away. So yeah, it's a result that only helps Palmeiras, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that would be it for Lucio Flavio. He is out of there. He got canned. The fans were calling for his head. And I think that he maybe was just a little bit over his head. And the search began immediately for a new coach. John Textor came out and said, the coach that we hire is going to be the coach for the end of the season and next season. And who they go out and get? Thiago Nunes, the coach of Sporting Cristal. We mentioned them way back in the group stages of Libertadores. A couple of Brazilian players on that roster, including the striker Brenner. And they were looking good. Actually, in Fluminense's group, I believe, in Libertadores. And I think they got a win at least against Flu or River Plate. Looking impressive, doing decently well in the Peruvian league as well. So Thiago Nunes didn't do so well with Corinthians, Sierra, but of course known for his triumph with Atlético Paranaense. So he comes in and he'll be the coach theoretically until the end of 2024. We of course know that this is Brazil and that is highly unlikely. But we'll see if he can save Botafogo. They do have that game in hand, like I said, but we'll see if anything changes. All right. We mentioned Grêmio earlier in the episode. They're launching a title bid as well. This result definitely doesn't help them. They hosted Corinthians and they lost to a 10-man Corinthians for most of the game. One goal for Corinthians, nothing for Grêmio, and Angel Romero, excuse me, once again on the score sheet.
Yeah, and I can't believe how Grêmio gave this one away. There could have been a penalty for Corinthians prior to that red card. And the VAR didn't call the referee for that. They called him for the red card, which, by the way, Mendes deserved. And after that, it was pretty much all Gremio, attack after attack. And in my opinion, it took so long for Gremio to score that they just gave this one away. Corinthians got the first goal with Romero. And after that, I can't believe how this game ended 1-0. And despite Bruno Alves also getting a red card for Gremio, still Gremio, it's a bad result. It's like losing against a fifth division side in this sort of match. So, yeah, this is definitely not going to help them at all. On the other side, we had Vasco da Gama beating 2-1 America Mineiro. Vegetti scored in the fourth minute, and Mastriani only 11 or 9 minutes later equalized. And it seemed like the game was heading for that result until Dimitri Payet, the man that came from France and scored a lot of goals like these from free kicks, whether he played for Marseille or West Ham, he pretty much does that and gives Vasco da Gama the winner here. Three very important points, and something that as Santos fans, we wouldn't like to see, because Vasco is one of our direct rivals, and the best result would have been either America to win or a draw in this match, which was unlikely.
Yeah, you're right. Wasn't what we wanted, but listen, America, not very good, and Vasco, I think, much the better team. They've been great on the second half of this season, and Dimitri Payet, incredible free kick taker, and that's just what you get when you bring in such a specialist from Europe. Gonzalo Mastroianni, we talked about him a little bit, but I just want to go over the stats. Leading scorer in the Sudamericana, 9 goals in something like 10 or 11 matches. He's averaging a goal every other game in the Brescia Real, 11 goals in 22 matches. Going to be a very nice striker for whoever picks him up. I doubt he'll drop down to Serie B. The 30-year-old probably will slot in on another Serie A team, maybe even one of the other teams coming up from Serie B. All right, let's power through these last couple of results here, Enric. Santos hosting Sao Paulo, San Sao Derby, 0-0. No goals in this one. We'll take the point. We'll take it.
Definitely, looking at how this match went, I mean, I believe Sao Paulo scored 2 goals and both of them were offside, or maybe one. And then we saw posts, we saw amazing saves by our one and only João Paulo, who pretty much did what he did against Corinthians. So somehow we get a point out of this match, and I can't believe this. Santos could have lost 3-0 in this game, despite Sao Paulo having nothing to play for. If we had won this, we would have been only 1 point away from Sao Paulo. So it's crazy as it sounds, still 0-0 is a pretty good result for us. And I'm happy with the point, as you were. Another match we can talk about is Bahia and Atletico Paranaense. Everaldo scoring early for Bahia in the 73rd, or not early, late in the second half with Everaldo as a penalty kick shot. And then Canobio tied it in the 87th. Another great result for Atletico Paranaense getting a point, but also for Santos, because we won't like to see Bahia getting the 3 points any possible way. So, yeah, these are pretty much the games of this round.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to round it off, Cuiabá defeated Fortaleza. Again, Cuiabá looking great. The duo, Daverson and Isidro Pita, very nice duo there. Some rumors, actually, Isidro Pita, the Paraguayan, I believe, connected a little bit to Santos. I don't know if there's any real substance to that, but one of the strikers that have been really coming into his own this season. And also, Atletico Mineiro versus Goiás, 2-1, Gallo wins it. Hulk scores that penalty, and I wanted to come back to this only because I mentioned the historic nature of some of the stats that these guys have been posting up, Hulk and Paulinho, that is. They are now the third best scoring duo in Atletico Mineiro history. They still have 4 games left to go. 28 goals apiece in all competitions for Paulinho and Hulk, 56 total. And the record from 1986 is 61 goals. So five more goals between the two of them in four games. I think it's possible, and that duo could become the highest scoring in the history of the club. So some really cool stats there. And it's nice to see Hulk at one end of his career at 37 years old, and a nice new up and comer, a nice new shiny toy in Paulinho coming up, and who will be probably a great idol for Atletico Mineiro should he choose to stay. Although maybe European teams might be back in the market for him. All right, Enric. So table so far, lots to talk about here. Of course, we've already banged on about Palmeiras taking the top spot. Botafogo 2 points off. What else is going on in this table that's attracting your attention?
So much is going on. Looking at the top six, only 5 points differ Palmeiras, who is in the first place, and Flamengo in the sixth place. So, yeah, anything can happen in this competition. Flamengo, by the way, still has a game less. So if they win that, they'll have 60 points. They'll be tied with Botafogo, who also have a game less. But looking at that game, they'll be playing away against Fortaleza. And I don't know if they can even get a draw out of that game. And then on the lower side of the table, we have so many teams fighting for relegation. America already eliminated to Serie B. Coritiba almost, they'll get relegated as well. Pretty much no hopes for them. Goiás are also pretty close. And then you got Cruzeiro and Bahia also fighting with each other at the moment. And looking above that, there are some big, big Brasileirão sides like Vasco da Gama, Santos, Inter, Fortaleza, Corinthians, and Sao Paulo, who are 10th. Anything can happen in this competition, and none of them have been performing really well. You look at their previous matches, all of those teams either drew or lost, so no wins there, and who knows what would happen. I saw a stat on Twitter. Santos has pretty much escaped relegation. Their percentage of getting relegated is 3% at the moment, so if they get one more win, that's going to become 1%. So I'm happy to hear that, but I'm still doubtful of our hopes for escape, because I don't know what will happen, especially when you have Fortaleza in the last round of Brasileirão. It's always a tough match to play in. But other than that, we want to take a look and talk about Serie B. It's something that I think we haven't talked since when the competition started back in April 15th, and so much have changed. Vitória, they got a win yesterday against Novo Horizontino, so they find themselves promoted to the first division. They'll be back after 5 years in Serie A, so I'm happy to see them back. And then there's teams that are pretty much so close with each other, despite only being 2 weeks left before the competition ends. We started with Atlético Goianiense, currently in the second position with 61 points, and all the way to the 10th spot with CRB, they had 54. So the difference between the second and 10th spot is 7 points. As crazy as it sounds, anyone can make the jump to the promotion, and anyone could not make it. So you never know what would happen. We made some predictions in the beginning of the season, and we'll be able to talk about those predictions once this tournament is over. But on the other side of the table, the relegation, ABC and Londrina have both been mathematically relegated to Serie C of 2024. And then there's teams that could get relegated at the moment, starting with Ituano, Ponte Preta, Tombense, and Chapecoense, including Sampaio Correa. So some names that we have heard in the Brasileirão or even in the Paulista in the last couple of years. And yeah, you never know what will happen. And 2 weeks left, any team can win, any team can lose. And it's the unpredictability of this Brasileirão league, whether it's Serie A or B.
Yeah, and one of the clubs that we talked about last year, Ituano, so close to Serie A, and this is just it's crazy to think that, you know, they were just so close to being where Vasco is right now. They could have Dimitri Payet. Just kidding. But yeah, now they're basically struggling against relegation. Same with Chapecoense, of course, the team that famously won the Sudamericana in 2016 and then tragically I was involved in that plane crash that killed just didn't really tragic number of their players. Almost all of them, maybe three or four, survived. So I always like to see them, and I hope to see them back in Serie A very soon. But yeah, just it is crazy. But some big clubs: Juventus, Criciúma, Sporting de Recife, all looking. I really hope Atletico Goianiense it come up, because we enjoyed seeing them last year. All right, Enric. Also,
Well, I just wanted to say really quickly, you hope Atletico Goianiense, I hope Sport Recife jumps up, because I don't know what happened to them in the last couple of matches. They were pretty much first or second throughout this Brasileirao, and Vitória got the first spot, and now Sport is sitting in fifth with 60 points. And yeah, it was Juventus wins their game, as well as Criciúma. They play tomorrow, I believe. The situation for Sport will not be good. One of their last two matches will be against Vitória, so I don't know what will happen in that match. So yeah, the team of Wagner Love, previous Luciano Juba, who now plays for Bahia, seems like they're gonna get stuck in Serie B next year.
All right, so other than that, we've got the U17 World Cup going on. Brazil are, of course, the defending champs, last played in 2019. Caio Jorge, Lázaro, Gabriel Veron were all on the team. And they unfortunately lost to Iran in the group stage, but they play England and New Caledonia, I believe part of France. I'm not sure why they're an independent nation in this, but yeah, so that's their group there in the World Cup. But more importantly, we have the national team call-ups, playing Colombia and I believe Argentina. So two pretty tough matches, especially the second one. And so shakeup, definitely a shakeup here. Tons of new players in here. Enric, what stands out to you? I know two keepers from the Brasileirao, Lucas Perry and Bento, who just replaced Ederson. Some other players from Fluminense, from different leagues around Europe that we're not accustomed to seeing. But what's really got you interested in the proposed lineup here from Fernando Diniz?
I mean, goalkeepers, pretty much what we usually see. I'm happy that Bento will take Ederson's spot, maybe for an injury or for other reasons. I'm not sure. Looking at defenders, Bremer, Gabriel Magalhães, Marquinhos, or Carlos Augusto and Renan Lodge are names that we saw in the past. And then even Nino, I believe he played in the last or against Uruguay or was injured. Something happened. I'm not sure. But a name that I don't like seeing, Emerson Royal for Tottenham. I don't think he is capable of starting in Premier League, let alone playing for Brazil. So I don't know why he got called for that right back position. Maybe because we don't have many spots available. But what I really like is the number of Brasileirao players that we see. You mentioned the two keepers, also Nino that we talked about. You look at the midfield, we have André. And we also have Rafael Vega, another name that I don't agree starts or is capable of playing in this national team. Bruno Guimarães, happy with. Douglas Luiz, I'm also happy with, as well as Joao Linton. Rodrigo, another player that deserves to play for the national team. But then we get to the most important spot. And what are the names that you like most from here, Peter?
Well, before we get to that, and I'll actually let you have the thunder there, but really interesting the placement. You noticed in midfielders is included Rodrigo, usually played out wide as kind of a winger for Madrid. It's clear that Fernando Diniz is intentionally including him with the midfielders. I think he's going to be kind of that Neymar role, central attacking midfield, you might say, maybe even false nine-ish area, depending on how he wants to set up. But definitely more in that midfield. And I thought that was really interesting, that switch from forward being listed to attacking midfielder. But Enric, you kind of teed me up there, and I will take it, I guess, after all. But really the big news is Endriki is included with the senior team. I think going to be, if he plays, the second youngest player ever for the team. Oh, number one. Since youngest since R9, Palais, some of the players that were called up this young. So just incredible. He came into the practice facilities today in an outfit that kind of resembled the Palais. I don't know if that was intentional or just coincidental, but yeah, this forward lineup, very shooken up. João Pedro from Brighton. I've got a little issue with that. Pepe from Porto, former of Grêmio. Very nice, happy to see this one. Paulinho from Galo. We've talked about him already this episode and how good he's been. So awesome to see him get the call up for the main team. But you'll notice who's not included. Marcos Leonardo, a snub, maybe. He was called for the under-23s. I don't know if Santos are going to let him go. But yeah, it's really unfortunate. Well, I'd like to see him get out and get on that senior team. His time will come, I'm very confident. But looking at him and a player like João Pedro, perhaps he's got some good stats in Europe right now, but some of them were from the Europa League where they play Ajax, which is, if you know anything about Ajax right now, they're just an absolute dumpster fire. And I just really think Marcus Leonardo has been showing that even on this bad team, he can still score goals with maybe not the level of service and still finding the way. And all this is showing me is that Marcus Leonardo is going to have a huge chip on his shoulder and he's going to even play even better. And he's going to ram it down Fernando Diniz's throat and he's going to score tons and tons of goals. And when he finally gets the call to put the canary in blue on, I think he's going to do the same for the national team.
Yeah, I really hope that's the case. A name that has been scoring and playing a lot for Santos recently. Maybe his time hasn't come yet for the national team, but it will definitely come at some point, maybe within the next year or so. So I'm happy with the selections, honestly. Enrique, I think that shirt that he was wearing, he did it on purpose. And he'll be playing against Gabriel Jesus, who I'm not sure if you saw on Twitter, but they took a picture with each other a couple of years ago, I believe, when he joined Manchester City. So it's crazy that these guys knew each other for so long, maybe through Palmeiras, the academy, and the first team. So yeah, a couple names. Martinelli has been playing really well for Arsenal. The same thing goes for João Pedro. I've seen him score goals alongside Ansu Fati for Brighton. And then Paulinho, another name that I'm happy with. We talked about him being the top goal scorer in this Brasileirão. Rafinha and Vini Jr. But then Pepe, Porto player, not the defender. He's from Portugal, but left wing or right wing. I don't know what to say about this decision. Haven't seen much of him. Haven't heard anything crazy about this player. Hopefully he plays well, but I expect him to sort of stay in that substitution spot and not play either against Colombia or Argentina. And then going to the under-23 call-ups, here we see a lot of names that we normally see in the Brasileirão, starting with the goalkeepers. Pitaluga, a goalkeeper for Liverpool. Mikael, goalkeeper of Atlético Paranaense. Going through the defenders, we see Lucas Beraldo, Robert Renan, who plays for Zenit. Vinicius Tabias from Real Madrid. Vanderland from Palmeiras. Midfielders. There is Andre Santos from Nottingham Forest, Igor Jesus of Flamengo, Pablo Maia of Sao Paulo, Vitor Hugo of Flamengo, and then the attacker, of course, pretty much we know all of them, Gabriel Peck of Vasco da Gama. Really happy that he is. I didn't know he was this young. I thought he was 24, 25, but to be under 23 and perform the way he was performing, especially in the beginning of the season, really happy that he got a call up. Guilherme Biro of Corinthians, John Kennedy, of course, after performing in the Libertadores final with Fluminense, Matheus Nascimento of Botafogo, haven't heard him play for Botafogo in a long time, and then Savio of Girona alongside our main striker who didn't call up for the national team but now gets called up for the under-23, Marcos Leonardo. So I'm happy with all these selections. I don't think there's any name that's missing here. So hopefully the team and the youngsters do well in the competition that they'll be playing in and maybe bring a trophy at their early stages of their careers.
All right. Let's hope so. All right, cool. So let's just wrap it up. Couple of things on the radar for the next upcoming week. Like we said, World Cup qualifiers, Colombia versus Brazil. And then in the Maracanã, Brazil hosting Argentina. What a match that's going to be. Definitely tune in for that. It makes it even more special that it's in Rio de Janeiro at the Maracanã. World Cup under 2017, like I mentioned earlier, New Caledonia and England on the docket for Brazil. And then we've got some catch-up to do, Henrik. Fortaleza versus Botafogo from match week 29. Fortaleza also has to play Cruzeiro. Flamengo versus Red Bull Braga. Fluminense versus Sao Paulo. And this one's a crucial one for the relegation battle. Cruzeiro hosting Vasco da Gama. Tons of really important fixtures there that are going to tell us a lot about where each team ends up and who is safe and who is potentially going to be a champion. Henrik, also some stuff going on in the second division. Serie B, what's going on?
Yeah, tomorrow we will have the rest of match week 20 or 36. Guarani playing Suizuma, two rivals who are still alive for the promotion zone. Juventude will play away against ABC, who is pretty much relegated. So Juventude hopefully won't have any issues winning here despite being at home. And then next week we will have Serie B match week 37. Novo Horizontino will play away against Londrina. Suizuma at home against Botafogo of Sao Paulo. Juventude will play at home against Ponte Preta. And the same thing goes for Guarani against ABC and Villanova against Ceará. And then two really tough matches, one that I mentioned earlier, Vitória and Sport Recife competing with each other. Again, Vitória having nothing to play for, but they would be pretty happy to take points off Sport and maybe not promote them to next year's first division. And then the same thing will happen against with Mirassol playing Atlético Goianiense. This is another tough rivalry that will pretty much decide who is going to get promoted and who's going to stay out. So definitely many matches that we can watch, whether it's Serie A or Serie B. We're getting to the end of those competitions, and it's November 13th, 1 week or 1 month or less than a month from now. We're going to know the champion of Serie B, and we're going to know the champion of Serie A, and we're going to have nothing to watch. So hopefully more entertaining things come on for the podcast. And yeah, we're definitely going to be here for you guys producing hopefully every week.
Yeah, absolutely every week, and we'll definitely be doing some interesting stuff. All right, well, cool. So that's what you have to look forward to. And besides all the matches, you also have another episode of the Smoking Snake coming very soon. Thanks everyone so much for listening, especially if you made it this far. Yeah, just thanks so much, and have a great night. We'll be back soon.